Blog Talk.
Blog Talk Radio.
Wait. It's that time. Pepperdine. Volleyball. It's not even a correct statement. Oh. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Net Live. Kent Steffes, if you're out there, you want to know where Reed Pretty is? He's right across from me this week. We've got him back. He's off the road, paid $15,000 to change his plane ticket so he could get back here and do this show. That's dedication. That is most definitely. Welcome, everyone, to the Net Live here on a Monday, starting a little bit late as we're getting things going here in Southern California. Another beautiful day and so much to report on in the sport of volleyball. Myself, Kevin Barnett, sitting with Reed Pretty and DJ Roche. We're going to miss Geeta this week, but he's out doing Dodgers or somebody else that's bigger time than us.
Are you sure he's doing Dodgers? I thought he was doing some sort of parade for winning the Junior Olympics.
Is that what it was? The ticker tape? Ticker tape down Hermosa Avenue? I'm not really sure.
I toggled through last week's show on the on my iPod, and I'm about 45 minutes in, and it was still juniors related. That must have been the highlight episode of the year for you.
I kept trying to mute him, and he kept unmuting. It's just, it was a battle of buttons, and he was winning for much of it. Hey, we've got a lot to report on. World League has concluded, and we have Reed here. We're going to talk to him about that entire tournament. U.S. results and other. The Pan American Cup on the women's side of the game has concluded, and we're going to have Jennifer Tamas. Thomas? See, this is a whole discussion. I've always been told it's Tamas. Jennifer Thomas in here to talk about the results there for the women's team and get an update on where they are in their season. They're just about to get underway with Grand Prix here shortly, the women's equivalent of World League. FIVB was in Gstaad, and there were some interesting results there. We'll cover that. And Women's World Cup Soccer, we have to report on that, don't we? I mean, after the historic, crazy game yesterday, we got to weave that back into some volleyball context somehow, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like the same sport, high participation in the States, yet hasn't really broken through in the States as it has worldwide. But, man, I think it was a 2.4 overnight rating, which you people in TV,
you
I don't
people.
Really know what that means, but I think that's a lot.
2.4 million people? That's quite a bit.
Are we doing that on Versus?
I don't know if we're getting a tenth. I don't know if we're getting a blip of like a 0.1 on that those broadcasts, unfortunately, Mr. Pretty.
That was awesome, though. You know what I liked with the interviews afterwards, how it was super fresh, and a lot of times when you have big wins like that and it's that fresh, you're getting exactly what they're thinking. It's not like cliches and stuff like that, and I just liked how they were talking about how it was the American spirit and fighting through and never giving up and the determination and being against the odds. It's so interesting that Brazil really made that happen by allowing some delay of game.
By just collapsing. Typical, oh, we're just going to collapse here and waste some time. Not sure what the strategy is there, but I can tell you that the fighting spirit you're talking about, it's something you know, Reed, that's valued overseas with a lot of the teams, with American players. They love that about American players. That's something that people often say. We like to hire American players because you guys fight to the end, no matter the score.
You definitely saw that last night. I mean, that was awesome. I didn't get to see it live, but man, especially when goals are so few and far between, when you actually get that goal and you're watching it live, that's exciting stuff. And good for them, and they play France on Wednesday night, and obviously wish them the best of luck.
Bringing this back into a volleyball context, talking about what will this do for USA Soccer on the women's side of the game, what will it do for the overall profile of the national team? I, sadly, from my experience with this team, the U.S. men's national team, with this program, with broadcasting, I don't believe it's going to amount to much. If you look at World Cup for the men, last summer, huge response. I remember watching in Chicago when we were at a World League event. I remember rushing home to sit in my room and watch the end of the game. And I just thought it was a great thing. Everybody was behind it. You saw it everywhere. I was outside of an Irish pub in Chicago, 11 o'clock in the morning, right before the game began. There was a line around the block for people to get in to watch this game. And it didn't do anything for soccer. I mean, can anybody even name the last time soccer played, the men's team played? I mean, it was recently. I happened to see it on SportsCenter, but I think largely it didn't mean much beyond that moment. And when that moment comes around again, when World Cup comes around again, it will mean something. But that's the Olympic cycle that the volleyball teams are stuck in.
I think it really boils down to the fact that, like you said, it cycles every 4 years. And there's not an appreciation or even an understanding of what happens in between the gaps of the World Cup. And, you know, volleyball is stuck in that category as well. There's no understanding of World League. There's no understanding of the life that we lead as professionals because, you know, oftentimes, when the question is, what do you do for a living? I play volleyball half the year in the States, half the year in Russia. The question always becomes, how do you play for Russia, the Russian national team? I mean, there's
right.
no understanding of really the cycle. And that's, I think, what soccer's up against. However, you know, soccer has made, you know, huge leaps and bounds in the last 10 years. And the fact that ESPN is on board, I think they initially had to, I don't know this for sure, but I think I heard it along the way where they initially had to buy the time for ESPN.
And now ESPN's showing all this stuff live, and they've got guys set up, and they've got a studio set up. And I'm telling you, sports live, that's where the real story's at. It, you know, when you know the ending or it's not live, it's not as compelling. And when you're watching these soccer games live around the world, it's awesome stuff. And I think U.S. really does get behind them, but it's just once every 4 years. There's not that understanding of the in-between times.
Yeah, it's a shame for those sports that I think are appreciated in other places, as you mentioned. But the United States public, I think, largely unaware of what's happening volleyball, soccer in the in-between times. If you go back to just the women and the way that they were dominating years ago, the expectations for them to dominate and win World Cup, and I think the kickoff, I believe it was 94 when they did very well here, at It didn't translate to now. It didn't continue. It continued a little bit then, but it didn't translate all the way to now, and that's unfortunate. But one of the reasons that we're here is trying to build that awareness and that weekly thought process about the sport and what's happening in the sport all the time. And that I think we've been largely successful with that. I mean, you talked to a couple of fans this past week, and it's about getting people to buy in, to get them to buy into what's happening all the time. Talked to some fans down in Long Beach, said they watch or they listen to the show frequently. And it was an opportunity to get them interested in other parts of the game. So that's kind of the thing, is get interested in other parts of the game. And they've said, hey, I came to it as a beach fan, but now I find myself caring about indoor, or vice versa. And that's what you want. You want people educating themselves about the game and being interested. So, hey, we understand there's a couple of audio issues out there. We're going to take a short 30 seconds here and get them ironed out. The Net Live here on the Volleyball Network. Dom, tons to come. World League recap coming up. Pan American Cup recap coming up with Lynn Tamas. Thomas, I'll get that right into this. We're going to talk to her because I was always told Tamas. Now somebody told me Thomas. So it's like, I was in her wedding. It's Thomas. Okay, fine.
Didn't we do that with Brittany recently?
Yeah,
well?
We did. That's all kind of problems here. It's just me, I guess. Maybe.
No, it's not just you.
FIVB Gestad and so much more. The Net Live right back, 30 seconds. Hang in there.
Thank you.
back in tonight live here on the volleyballnetwork.com, getting started on a Monday morning. Kevin Barnett, Reed Pretty, and DJ Roche in here hanging out. We appreciate you being here. Hey, a discussion that we had last week on this program was about my new white iPhone. And the question became, is that a little too gay to have a white iPhone for a guy?
She took a lap of it, huh?
And we got a couple of emails about some people questioning the whole sensitivity issue.
Interesting.
Using the term, you know, gay or stereotype gay to refer to a white iPhone and the whole discussion that ensued. And I guess this is the part where we're supposed to issue an apology that I might be sorry if I offended anyone out there.
If you offended them.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm not sorry because, listen, here's my thing with all this baloney going on. I'm going to take it back to the word retarded because it's been going on in the NBA lately. Kobe used the word retarded, and I forget who the second guy was, came out and used the word retarded, and they fined him and fined Kobe like $100,000. And all these people are up in arms about use of the word retarded and this and that and not caring for people and this. Shut up. All right, that's the short answer. Shut up. Here's the long answer. The long answer is the word retarded no longer means someone with Down syndrome. It doesn't refer to someone with Down syndrome. You are, as a community, hanging on to a word and a definition of a word that you didn't like. You are reinforcing the definition of that word by fighting this tooth and nail. When someone yells at you that you are retarded, they are not literally implying that you are acting like someone who has Down syndrome or some other mental capacity issue. It has become a term that is in a different way, much the way that the term gay was co-opted to mean people of homosexual and lesbian natures, okay? Because gay used to mean happy. It used to mean something completely different than what it refers to today. So the definitions of words change over time as culture adopts them in different ways. And quite frankly, referring to the carrying of a white iPhone as perhaps being gay, I'm okay with. There's a stereotype out there about gay people, that they're flamboyant. And you know what? There's plenty of flamboyant gay people out there. I know them. I'm friends with them. Volleyball, as was pointed out by one of our listeners who emailed us, is a gay-friendly sport. No kidding. You cannot be a male and play this sport from a young age on up and not encounter that element of the sport. There are lots of homosexual men who enjoy the sport of volleyball. And I say that with no joking aside. There are whole gay events. There are whole gay teams at events I've been to. They are, in some cases, flamboyantly gay, and in some cases, not flamboyantly gay. And quite frankly, I don't really care. I have gay friends in the sport. I have gay friends outside of the sport. I don't care if you're gay. But the fact that I carry a white iPhone in today's world, people go, oh, that's a little gay. It's not literally meaning that I'm a homosexual or making bad remarks about homosexuals. I'm so tired of people being overly sensitive about words. Settle down. The reason I love South Park is because they make fun of everybody equally. And last time I checked on this show, we are an equal opportunity offender to ourselves and everyone else. So please don't think out there that I don't know gay people. I don't like gay people who are flamboyant and masculine beyond me. Okay? I've known a few of those guys. Would bury me in the weight room, could bench press me and throw me across the street, and gay as all hell. So cut it out, being so sensitive about this stuff. This is a problem for our society. We spend so much time on these worthless words that you don't think about actually respecting someone. My use of the word gay has nothing to do with my respect for another individual, regardless of their sexuality. So there's my rant.
That being said, we as a show want to apologize
for the remarks made last week. I'm going to use the word retarded.
Do we get fined? We fine ourselves for that?
We'll have to fine ourselves. Sweet. That's right. Our sponsors will begin dropping off like flies. Oh, wait. Hang on a second. If they do, it'll be a short bunch of people jumping.
If I offended somebody, I apologize.
Right.
I love that.
Right.
If. Am I going to apologize.
So it's just one of my little pet peeves about the whole thing. Just, you know, guys, we've got to be able to have some fun discussions in here. And laugh about stuff and not have it be a big deal. I have a white iPhone. People wonder if that's okay.
Matt Anderson has a white iPhone.
I have some good company. High-flying outside hitters. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's who has white iPhones. High-flying outside hitters.
I don't have a white iPhone.
Hence the picture we saw of you in Volleyball Monthly a few months back. I could flub that line a little bit more.
You mean the one where I was – the form was great except for
– Except
I
the net looked
– I hit underneath the ball and it was on a tennis net.
It kind of looked like the net was 10 and a half feet tall.
Okay. Let's see where we're going here. Make fun of Jeremy Day.
Exactly. All right, let's get to World League. Enough with the other stuff. World League has concluded. Brazil, once again, not champion. Only the second time in about the last 10 years. I don't have my stats right in front of me, but they won it in 01, 02, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07. USA in 08. 9, 10. Brazil, 11. Russia in 5. 15, 11, I believe, in the fifth set. It's the correct score. And the reason I don't know, as many of you who are longtime listeners will know, is that the broadcast is coming up tomorrow evening in the studio. So I did not watch the game. I do know the score. And I will be doing play-by-play on said broadcast. Should be interesting. I'm going to be doing play-by-play, and Kevin Wong going to be moonlighting as the analyst. So it'll be Kevin and Kevin hosting the show. Should be interesting. But Russia, I think, in my opinion, Russia is the best team in the world right now. They just have to get over Brazil. They have to frequently get over Brazil. I think that that's sort of their mental hang-up. For me, serving-wise, block, the pressure they can put on you from not only the service line but also at the net is unparalleled by anyone, including Brazil. Thoughts,
Reed? You just did what every broadcaster in our sport is doing lately, and it's a pet peeve of mine. I'm going to start a rant right now.
Oh, boy. Right back. Take it.
No. Identifying one team as the best in the world, I think it's clear that there's several teams that can win at any given moment, and there is no doubt that Russia deserved to win. The way that they sided out makes it real difficult to beat them because they have such a good serve and block defense.
Yeah.
And usually that's what they rely on, and I've always said that siding out keeps you in the game, but scoring real points wins championships. They were able to do both at a high level. And the impressive part for me was watching, even if you watch the final, it wasn't the highest level you've ever seen. In fact, Paul Sunderland was about to shoot himself or to shoot somebody else and go serve the ball for them.
Yep.
As you'll see in the third set, that there was, yep, I don't know, a combined like 16 service errors between teams. And you're going to get that. And that, you know whose fault that is? That is not Brazil's fault. That's not Russia's fault. It's the FIVB's fault.
The rules.
And the reason is that this tournament started for a lot of players merely days after an 8-month competitive season overseas on the heels of a 3.5-week world championship. And then we go into a 6-week long pool play, into a 5-day final, which basically is from Wednesday to Saturday. Those guys played every single day. And I got to hand it to Russia because those guys did not play their second team like other teams did, like Brazil. And so Taras Kite, the captain of Russia, did not have his best match in the finals, but the fact that he was out there grinding it out, I mean, I could just see the exhaustion on his face, was impressive. And, you know, to me, hands down to them, they've been sniffing the podium at every single event for like the past 8 years, and I know it was huge for Alekno, the coach of Russia, to take that job back, to kind of build it with some new players, by the way. There's some fresh faces that you see out there, and to have them come out and win like that, those two teams being fresh and playing at their highest level, I would agree with you. I think Russia edges them out.
You mentioned Vladimir Alekno, the coach. Isn't he your coach, Bree?
He is.
Vladimir Alekno taking back the national team job from Daniele Bagnoli, who had a short stint there, an Italian coach who had taken over the national team. I thought one of the things that Russia had been missing for all these years was the ability to play the game. They could overpower the game, but they couldn't play the game. All of a sudden, under Bagnoli, I actually started to see these guys play the game a little bit more. But now I think, Reed, you bring up a good point about the age of these players. They're bringing in some of these younger players and younger guys who've been in the league now, in this professional league that has risen over the past 6 or 7 years, to perhaps be the best in the world, or at least considered in that discussion. And I think you're seeing guys now that can play the game better, that can feel the flow, can play block and defense. Russia could always block. The question was, could they play defense behind it? And for a long time, they couldn't. All you had to do was get it past the block, and you'd get a kill. Well, now all of a sudden, you find yourself in a situation where the world's best blockers and the world's best serving team now have a defense, and they can transition the ball and get it out to their hitters, who every day in practice are taking swings against huge blocks. So to deal with the United States block, to deal with Brazil's block, to deal with the other country's block in a match situation is actually a downgrade from their practice environment. So for me, Russia's a very scary entity. I have a hard time believing that they're going to lose a lot of matches between now and London. Barring injury, barring some sort of blow-up inside of that team, I think that that's a team on the rise, and the rest of the world better look out, because even Brazil is in trouble.
You know, another team I think that everyone should keep their eye on is Argentina. They're well coached by Weber. We've mentioned it before on the show. He was a long time, just phenomenal setter.
And tiny.
He's like 5'8", maybe.
I played against him quite a bit. Very good player.
Very good player. He's coaching now. They've got a great setter in DiCecco, and they've got two great outside hitters, and they just run unbelievably fast. One of the Faciendo, I think his name is, Conte, Hugo Conte's son.
Right.
Up-and-coming team. Those guys grind it out. I'm not sure how Poland beat them. I think Argentina's a superior team for the bronze medal. Maybe it has to do with the crowd. Maybe it has to do with, like I said before, the rest. Maybe they're not as deep as some other teams. But I would definitely keep an eye out for them over the next 4 to 6 years, because I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Poland actually coming out twice on top of Argentina, once in pool play with a 3-2 score, and then again in the bronze medal with a 3-0 score over Argentina. Again, the fatigue factor, I think, kind of getting to people. And this is a long tournament. You're talking 115 matches over 7 weeks with 16 teams involved, and then cutting down to 8 for the final. It's a huge amount of volleyball, huge volume. And the United States team getting there late. You guys left on Sunday, arrived Monday, and had to play on Wednesday against teams that had already been there. So certainly a huge challenge. And Reed, I know you had some comments about the travel schedule that you guys had, and I sent you an email back about what I thought some of the reasons were, but what were some of the internal discussions going on about the travel and as it related to finishing your last couple of matches here?
Well, we had the choice of a window of opportunity to play those matches. We could have started Wednesday, played Wednesday, Thursday. We could have played Thursday, Friday, but instead we chose Friday, Saturday, left on Sunday, traveled to Poland. That certainly might have helped our attendance in Long Beach.
Being Friday, Saturday, as it was.
Being Friday, Saturday, and the support was great. Gardhoff and crew, I know he's listening, that was great. I mean, to pull up to a match and see guys tailgating, that was cool. You know, I think that's part of our community. You know, that sort of party, having fun atmosphere is a part of volleyball that we don't get to see much in indoor in terms of the traveling that we do. And so that was very neat to see. And they came out decked out in their red, white, and blue, which was cool. That definitely took a toll. But I go back to the FIVB. And, you know, my thought to the guys this last week was, you know, volleyball is absolutely huge in Poland. It's huge in Brazil. It's huge, you know, in all these other countries around the world. It's not huge here. What can we bring to the table? And I think that we have a pretty well-established law system. So my thought is we establish a players' union. We run it. We help organize all the players. And then we go and try to lobby to see if the players can actually have a voice in some of these decisions. Because right now, they're just running players into the ground, and you're not getting the product that you would get if there were some built-in rest periods. Not to mention, you know, the sort of broadcasting TV rights that they're selling to some of these countries. And, you know, it would be great to see that. You know how it is. Let's lock this thing out.
This is the discussion that's going on with the NFL right now, Reed, because they're talking about the schedule, the preseason games, the amount of grinding that's going on players, and it's exactly the issue you're getting to. And there's always a push between the players and the organization, because the organization is selling a brand, and whether it's the best that it can be at the end of the year. You know, the discussion with the players in the NFL is, well, we have these four preseason games, and by the time you reach the end of the year, the product isn't as good because so many guys are hurt because of those extra four games. And, you know, that holds some weight. And same thing here. Your product isn't as good because your team, your guys are coming off a professional season and you're jamming this tournament into 7 weeks. I get it from the player's perspective. If I was playing, I'd be complaining with you. I also get it from the other perspective of the business, that they want to run as many events as possible and maximize their product. And if they lose a couple of guys along the way, even if it's a Jibo or a Pretty or a Mikhailov or any of these other guys who are premier players in the world, it's okay because the product is stronger than those individuals. And that's actually a healthy thing for your sport. That's a healthy thing for your sport. And I think we're seeing on the beach side of the game the unhealthy side of that, where you have players who feel like they are bigger than the sport because their individual brands are perhaps bigger than the sport itself anymore because the sport has taken such a downfall. Indoor volleyball worldwide is hugely popular. If you have one or two stars missing out of the collective world teams, not that big a deal. The product is still good. People are still fired up about it. I think that's actually a sign of health, even though I, like you, Reed, would be very upset that I was not riding business class all the time. So I'm with you on that. But it's good. I think the sport is healthy. You look at too many events going here. At
Gdansk,
things with G that don't start really with G. Cities that start with G for 400, Alex. Gdansk, Poland, where the finals were held. 11,409 capacity in that place. Jam-packed for the Poland matches. Very crowded for the other matches. The finals packed. Just a great place to host an event. This is a place that's going to host the 2011 European Championships. They're going to host the 2014 Men's World Championships. So Poland is a place where it's on the rise and where the sport, you can see the health of it. They are packing the stands for matches that don't involve the home country.
It's a cool deal, too. I mean, tons of press. It's shot in HD and the coverage is great. And, you know, the recognizability, that's not a word. Everyone is aware of volleyball, the taxi drivers, the people at the hotel and all that stuff, and, you know, restaurants. It's a pretty cool environment. And even outside of so even if you didn't get a ticket to the actual event, there was so much to do outside of the event. There were some beach courts, there was a beer garden, and all sorts of fun things to be a part of. And so it was a great event. And you know what, congrats to Russia. Like I said, they've been knocking at the door for a long time. They're a great team. Max Mihailov just absolutely delivering balls all night. And, you know, Sasha Buchko, the second setter, was the guy who carried him through from second set to all the way to the fifth. And that's the guy I played with in Novosibirsk. And so a lot of guys that I've played with, and it was neat to see. And, you know, maybe some information from the locker rooms. This is what I heard back when Alekno was negotiating his contract, which I thought was really interesting, was that he said that he did not want the players or himself to receive a salary. He thought that playing on the national team was an honor, and it was something that they should serve in such respect. And however, if they were to win anything, then they would all get massive bonuses. And I believe his request was he wanted Bagnoli's salary as a bonus for every time they won something. So they won $1 million from the FIVB, but I can't even imagine how much they won when they go home and get their payday. But good for them. They've they put in the work, and it was you know, a good volleyball to watch.
Russia's been on the podium the last 5 years. They've been second and third. They've lost to Brazil in the finals twice. So for them to finally get it done is a huge step forward for that team. Final standings: Russia number one, Brazil two, Poland three. Great finish for Poland. Great for the sport. Much the way we like to see Japan doing well, love to see Poland doing well and increasing the visibility in that country. Argentina fourth, Bulgaria fifth, Italy sixth. Surprising for me that Italy finished as well as they did and had a great tournament. USA seven, Cuba eight, Serbia nine. Again, surprising. Serbia has fallen so far. missing some players, perhaps a team in transition. Finland 10, and the rest aren't even worth mentioning, are they? So that's the result there. The effect on the world rankings is an interesting one because Brazil still ranked number one. Russia still ranked number two. The United States, by virtue of their finish, rises from fifth to third. Italy rises from sixth to fourth. Serbia goes down two, so they shrink from third to fifth. Cuba also down two, down to sixth. And Bulgaria stays the same. Poland, Argentina, Germany rounding out the top ten. And people out there are asking, how is it that the United States didn't finish great or had teams finish above it, that then they moved up above? The reason that it looks like this is because the FIVB rankings is a rolling 12-month calendar, or a rolling calendar of events. So you have these large events. Right now it incorporates the 2007 World Cup, the 2008 Olympic Games, the 2009 Continental Championships, the 2010 World Championships, and now the 2011 World League. And so you have those points being totaled up. And what happens is as you drop an event off and you put a new event on, the rise or fall of the teams doesn't always correspond with the results in the latest tournament. It's a little bit deeper than that. So that's why you have a little bit of difference in those world rankings. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Pan American Cup a little bit in preparation for Jen Thomas joining us. Got an update on Favre. I know, I had to think about it. We have an update on a volleyball player formerly known as Favre.
Favre? Is it possible? He's playing again? I mean, I don't know. You'll have to tune in.
Yeah.
We held a retirement press conference on this show.
Yeah, we did. We sent him off.
I sent him a wetsuit.
Wished him well.
I sent him a wetsuit as a gift. And
For the lake or
do
what?
Do you get that back now?
That's what he texted me back. He said, do I have to give that back? So we'll tell you who that is coming up.
The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. Glad you're here.
Never listen up, B. Yeah. Boy, was it neat. Yeah. Not just me, she was so leavy when she did the freak with me. Never listen up, B. Yeah. Boy, was it neat. Yeah. The girl's a freak. The girl never misses a beat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not just me, she was so leavy when she did the freak with me. It didn't twerk, no. It wasn't fucking no more. And I was so needy, but she was so needy when she did sleep with me.
Welcome back into the groovy and funky NetLive Lounge.
Do you know who that is?
I have no idea.
Kevin.
I wasn't even listening. I'm here working, Jeremy.
Do you know, you got me turned back up?
I mean, like these breaks, just in the breaks, I'm like chilling in my chair, like screwing along.
Yeah, what do you think
I'm
doing?
No, dude, it's mad panic. I'm writing stuff down. I'm watching the chat board for what people are saying. I'm trying to figure out where this show's going. I gotta steer this ship, man. This thing's a beast.
Whoa.
It's like the Titanic. It's too big. The rudder is too small.
Well, can I tell you?
And we might sink at any moment.
Later in the show, there's going to be some A Tribe Called Quest because I saw the documentary last night and it was awesome.
I heard excellent reviews of that, actually, on Larry Mantle's Film Week on NPR, which I like to listen to. And he gave high marks.
That group is why I like hip-hop.
I know Reed is a big fan.
I stole it
from Reed's computer ages ago.
And I heard that they weren't big fans of the actual documentary.
There was some drama. I think it's gotten better now, but there was some drama with they didn't like how they were portrayed a little bit. But anytime, I would be nervous about having a documentary about me.
Reed wouldn't be happy with a documentary about him traveling around. About the national team, if we had a true documentary... Like the real team or something. I don't know what you call it, but yeah, you know, this is when people stopped just playing volleyball and got real.
It's not all kittens and candies. What does Gator say?
Kittens and candles. It's not all rainbows and ponies.
Yeah.
It could be rainbows and ponies. Hey, the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. If you want to get in the discussion, 347-677-1525 is our number. Our email is thenetlive@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. And our Facebook page, which we just put a sweet picture of one Brad Keenan, beach volleyball professional, up on, is facebook.com/thenetlive. Right now, I just want to know what Brad Keenan's doing because he looks all retarded in the photo. See? Weaving it right back.
In the emails.
We're having a further discussion about that issue. And I just, I want people to be less sensitive. I want people to be out there having a good time and be less sensitive. Use of a single word is not supposed to be offensive to an entire group of people. I'm sorry.
Now, what part of our discussion during the break did you not understand?
We would
like to formally apologize for any comments made last week.
Or this week. It should just come with a disclaimer. Every show should come with a disclaimer. The opinions of Barnett are not those of the Net Live. Nor its affiliates.
And if he says something that offends you, if
he is sorry. No, actually, say if he offends you, he is not sorry. Take it up with him via email. TheNetLive@gmail.com or on our Facebook page. Hey, big thanks to the ABCA who supports us in so many ways. They support us with the College Volleyball Weekly, which is a great segment of our show. We've had a lot of terrific people involved with that segment of our program throughout the last year on the women's side. We had just great analysis and updates, I think, after each weekend of college volleyball, and we will get back to that as soon as the women's game gets underway here in about a month and a half. We'll get back to that, and Holly McPeak, I think, is going to join us. I think Dave Reed is going to hopefully rejoin us. We need to see if we haven't alienated him, and then we'll also look at Mike Sondheimer, who is here for the men's. If you're familiar with the men's College Volleyball Weekly, we may have him back in as well. A lot of experts giving their opinions on the great state of NCAA volleyball each week. So big thanks to the ABCA for supporting that. Juniors is done. As you know, if you listened to last week's show, you got to hear all about the end. But Juniors World is finished. The Beach World kind of hitting mid-stride here in the FIVB in Gstaad this past week. A little bit of a resurgence on the men's side of the game. There have been some injury issues for Phil Dalhauser, but it seems like they're back a little bit. Jeremy, what's a top five finish over there for the men?
Top five, Alisson and Emmanuel from Brazil won. Phil and Todd came in second. And then Julius and Jonas from Germany third. Some names I can't pronounce from Poland in fourth. And then Marcio and Ricardo from Brazil round out fifth.
I think that's just about right. That looks just about right. If you could swap number five, the number five slot between the Brazil and the United States, that looks about like I feel the volleyball world is right now. And really a healthy sign for the international tour that you have a Brazilian team. Alisson is an incredible player. You get a chance to watch him. He's sort of the beefier, slightly smaller version of Phil. And he's just a big athletic guy playing this game. Maybe reminiscent of Mike Whitmarsh back in the day.
Yeah, but bigger.
But bigger.
Yeah.
And better. I mean, Whitmarsh came to the game late, so he was always kind of, I thought, behind developmentally, although he became very good.
But
from the beginning of his career, he was playing catch-up.
Not as technical, but was still
right.
Would get his little get his hands up at the net last second to give you a stuff down.
Well, there's a difference between being a technically sound volleyball player and being a physically powerful force in the sport, and you see that transition a lot. I myself play on the national team. I couldn't play the game for 5 years on the national team. I had no clue. I just physically overpower the game, but I couldn't play the game with fluidity. You saw Whit Marsh do it later in his career, and I think you're seeing Alisson. He comes from a better volleyball culture, but he plays some wonderful volleyball.
Well, he's like 25, 26. He's still really young.
Oh, he's got plenty of time ahead of him. Good finish for Phil and Todd, I think, given the circumstance with Phil's ankle, which everybody's been kind of speculating how badly it's hurt and should he take some time off and this and that. Not a lot of time to take off in the grind, even for beach volleyball at this particular time. So good that he appears to be getting better each week. And then Germany, those guys can play. Keep seeing them up on the podium, beating the big teams with regularity. So really, really a good sign for the sport. I think it's neat stuff.
I got it. Man, just being on this end of the World League, 6 weeks plus the finals, being in a different location, but at least half of those locations being still in the States.
Yeah.
I have a new appreciation for what those guys are dealing with this year. It's like a proverbial World League that lasts 6 months long, and you never have a North American event. That's just crazy.
That's
so
tough.
So I can see if there is some dip in performance or some injury issues, I would wonder how many of those instances have to do with travel, they're travel related or just the wear and tear of being on the road for so long. I mean, the fact that we don't have, an established pro system happening here in the States with these guys traveling all over is just going to – it's a whole new – it's a different ballgame now.
Yeah, certainly with guys having to go over and live. I mean, they're back for those like Furbringer, who did the indoor thing for a while and lived overseas and had to stay there. He's got to just be thinking to himself, really, I'm back on this train again. At least it's summertime now when he's over in Europe. That's a bonus.
I stand corrected. Quebec has an event in 2 weeks. So North America, that's their closest one.
Aren't they part
home
of France, though? Isn't that their whole thing? That they're part of France? So the women, I believe, are getting ready for Moscow. The country quota matches are going on, Moscow being the next event on the women's side of the game. So stuff should be exciting there. Larissa and Juliana continue to play very well.
I watched that last final, though. Actually, it wasn't the last final. It was the one they actually showed on NBC last week.
Uh-huh. From Rome, right?
From Rome.
Yep.
And it was one of those situations where I knew the result, but I felt like I heard the result wrong the way I was watching the match, because it seemed like Misty and Carey were right there with the chance to win and maybe even had a match point or close to it. And the whole time I'm watching it, even early on in the fifth or the third set, I was just like, I think I must have read this wrong. Like, did they win this? And man, a couple points here and there turned into like 4-5. And the next thing you know, it was over. It was crazy. Last-minute serve to, they were obviously serving Misty the whole time, and then, boom, right at the end, serve Carey, they get a block, and then they get another block on Misty, game over. It's like, what just happened?
I think it's an interesting part of beach volleyball. The serving, you only have two options to serve two. And the whole game there where everybody serves away from Phil, or everybody serves away from Carey. And that getting back to him once in a while like that, I think is a good strategy. Get back to him at the end. Get back to him with a surprise serve or two. You gotta keep him honest. Otherwise, you just put those teams into a rhythm. Don't you think, Reed?
Yeah, for sure. There's no question about it. She's probably thinking about where to put that set for Misty, and the serve's probably going to go to her end line, and I'm going to put it up there, and then I'm going to cover her. That's probably her mental preparation. And then all of a sudden, the serve comes to her. And, maybe in a perfect world, she's preparing to pass the ball every time. But, I mean, after a 48-minute long match where you haven't seen one single serve, then I can see your mind not really focused on it.
This is not unlike a situation where you and Rich Lamborn are receiving with Matt Anderson, who was getting 70%, 60% of the balls from other teams when they were executing their scouting report. I mean, what are you doing in your preparation? Are you moving beyond the reception in some cases, or are you trying to figure out ways to take pressure off Matt?
That's one thing you'd like to do, is try to expand your area without giving up too much. And it's certainly true, late in a game where somebody switches it up, goes a different direction. That's a great strategy. And especially when you get somebody dialed in. You know, against the Russian Brazil final, they were float serving, having great success float serving the Russian libero. But after he sees 15, 20 serves, I mean, he's there for a reason. The guy totally grooves in, but they stayed on him. And that just enabled them to have a perfect pass offense, where I think I've seen this a lot with Phil and Todd. Well, they'll almost go two and two, two and two. You know, if a guy sides out twice, they'll go somewhere else to the other guy just to keep things, you know, keep teams out of rhythm. And actually, you know, from a serving standpoint, it really, you know, when a team is missing a lot of serves, it's also difficult for the side out team, even though it's free points,
yeah,
to stay in a rhythm.
That's true. That's very true. And I think the other strategy point that you have to get into is sometimes you got to get back and hit your best serve. There are a lot of players out there who don't have a serve that's capable of scoring anywhere on the court. But those that do, get back there, and if you're in a rhythm, you got to just hit the heck out of that thing and not worry too much about the other side. I mean, you think of big jump servers. When Clay Stanley goes back to serve, nobody tells him what area to serve. Nobody's holding up the one behind the clipboard for Clay. Just going, here's the ball. Have at it, big man.
Yeah, if anything, it's a thumbs up. Go get him.
Go get him.
You know, Vollywood just tweeted that there's a rumor that the FIVB is planning on using slow motion review system.
Cool.
Thoughts?
Do it. Because it's one of those things where it's either in or it's out. And every other major sport you have, it's in or it's out. And tennis, perfect example. There's a questionable call. They go to it because that's what you want to know. Was that ball accurately hit in the court or not? This isn't a questionable call like a roughing or a interference or some of the other calls that are out there.
Not a judgment call. It's in or it's out.
It's in or it's out. And it's so important. I would like to see the FIVB go to that because there are so many calls, especially when you have local linesmen in every country. You have traveling referees. This is how it works. When you're in the World League, you have a referee that travels each week to a location that does not include your match. And then in the finals, they bring them in, and you ref another country's match. So a United States official will never match ref a United States match. However, the lines people are all local. So there have been several occasions where there's a little home cooking going on the lines. And referees overrule it sometimes. Sometimes they're on top of it. Sometimes they're not. I'd like to see a system like that because that's a definitive thing. You can say the ball was in or out. There's no judgment in it at all.
Would you want it like the NFL where you have like challenges or every single time, let's go to the video replay?
I think the technology's there that if there's a questionable call, everybody knows which calls are questionable.
Yeah.
There's two or three. And some went the United States way this past tournament. I can think of, is it Puerto Rico? Or no, it was Brazil getting very fired up and legitimately so on a couple of plays. But I would like to see it where you have a video monitor, you have a video official who could perhaps throw the flag. Because the point is not to make it another strategy point. The point is to get it right.
Yeah.
I'm all for some other strategy things in the sport, but I think the point would be just to get it right. So let's have an official with a TV, with a monitor, with the whatever software or program they're using for this.
Just in and outs, or you want to do touches off the block, net?
See, that's an interesting question. Now you get into like the Major League Baseball or the football question of how far do you take it?
Because you don't want to slow the game down too much.
It's already slow enough.
They had ultimate slow-mo cams.
They were excellent. I'm glad you brought that up.
Unbelievable. Just like, you know, I don't know if it was like second by nanosecond, you know, frame
super
by frame. And even at some moments, it's hard to tell with the touch.
True.
But the line, there were so many missed line calls. And I'm telling you, I hate defending refs. It hurts me right now. But there are certain balls that travel so fast and hit at a certain angle where, like, I will swear, I'll put major money and the rest of my team's saying that it's in and the rest of my team's saying, no, that one was out or, you know, vice versa. But there were some ones, even in the fifth set, Brazil got hosed on a block. And, you know, you'd think...
I'm okay with Brazil getting hosed, by the way.
You'd think with, I don't know, six refs, six guys watching the game, that one of them might see the right thing. But, you know, the funny story about lines refs being home, guys, I'm not going to say which event it was at, but I went back to serve this summer, and I got like a go get him, Reed. Like, let's go get him, buddy. And, oh, man, I just about died laughing. I was like, man, am I back in college now or I'm getting rooted on by the lines ref?
I think the system should be used to correct all calls except those that go against Brazil. Really. I just think Brazil whines too much. They've had their moment in the sun, and let's be done with Brazil. Enough. No. No, I think it's the integrity of the game. Anything that will improve the integrity of the game and the officiating is important, because you have people that not only are local from a standpoint of affiliation and cheering, but also haven't necessarily seen the game at that level on a consistent basis. And as you mentioned, Reed, the speed of the ball, the speed of the play is something beyond what many of the lines people in a lot of the countries have ever seen or certainly seen recently.
That's a great question. So what sort of testing is involved? Do they have to have a certain
Fog up a mirror.
Are they like, they got to be 2020 or 2040?
They test your arm with the flag. Can you raise your right arm? And that's about it. If you have a pulse and you can raise your right arm, you can be a lines person in FIVB.
I know that the number one thing that is done for them on any given weekend is that they're given a sobriety test before the game. So that leads me to think that there's been issue in the past.
No way.
100% serious.
Of course. People fly airplanes drunk. You think they don't call lines in volleyball drunk?
That's awesome.
All right, let's get back to FIVB. There also was another group of athletes playing in Gstaad this past weekend.
The women?
Okay. The women. Top five.
Brazil won. Juliana and Larissa. Wonder if they were yelling at each other during the match.
Of course.
That's always entertaining.
Of course.
And then China. I'm going to butcher their names. Chen and Z. Zhang.
There you go.
Sir. Italy. Greta. Marta. Brazil, Maria, not going to get her name right either. And then Misty and Carrie round out fifth. Jane and April got a ninth. I know, not a very good outing for the U.S.
Jane and April coming off a win previous week in Norway.
They were probably late to the tournament. They couldn't check the swords on the plane.
That's right. But Misty and Carrie, is this the point where the modern media goes, are the wheels falling off?
Probably a complete panic. They didn't win. Oh, my gosh, they're over.
Yeah, they're in fifth. Oh, no. No, I think I think when you look at a fitness level, right, to play one or two tournaments over a couple of few weeks, no problem. To grind it out all summer, I think for both these women is going to be a challenge. I think you're going to see them maybe go in some cycles here, up and down a little bit. But that's what this season's for. That's why they're back together now. I think they got to iron it out before next year. So I'm not jumping on a panic button by any means, but I'm not surprised that they're not winning every tournament. I mean, you're talking, they're going up against women who have been playing consistently for 3 years, in most cases since the last Olympics, working hard, used to the grind, used to that mid-season funk that most of the players are in by this point.
And I'm sure they're not surprised. Obviously, I know they want to win every single tournament, but they can't. If you gave them some true serum, they'd be like, we know we're not going to win every single tournament.
We're getting back to that word we've heard so often here, process.
Yep.
Process, and one of the big preachers of that is Hugh McCutcheon. That's why we're going to talk to Jen Tamas about her team.
Jesus.
That's why we're going to talk to her about her team and the process that they're involved with, both this season, also in the 4 years, and I think every day in practice, talking about how to play USA volleyball, how to represent your team, yourself, your country, every day in practice, not just when you strap on the uniform and head out. We're going to take a short break here on the show. Jennifer Thomas coming up. Just a couple of minutes. Also an update on Volleyball Zone Favre. Talk about him. That and much more. Now I've heard this song I've heard.
Tribe Called Quest, buddy. You're welcome.
There you go. The Net Live. Enjoy.
Sublime. It's enjoyable to know you in the concubine. Take off your coats, ladies act like gems. Sit down, Indian styles, you recite these hymns. See, lyrically I'm Mario Andretti on the Momo. Ludicrously speedy or infectious with the slow-mo. Heard me in the 80s, JV's on the promo. Am I never in the quest to get the paper on the caper? But but now let me take it to the queen side. I'm taking it to Brooklyn side. All the residential pressures who invade the air. Hold up for a second, son, cause we almost there. You could be a black man and lose all your soul. You could be white and blue, but don't prep the road. See, my heat is universal if you got knowledge of solo or self or self. See, there's no one else who could drop it on the angle. Acute at that. So, who that, do that, do that, that, that.
Come on.
Who that, do that, do that, that, that.
Yeah.
Do that, do that, do that, that, that. I'm bugging out, but let me get back cause the wet. So run and tell the others, cause we all the brothers. I learned how to build mics in my workshop class. So give me the solo and let's not make it the last.
We on a war tour with Mob and my man. Going each and every city with the mic in the hand. Chinatown, Spokane, London, Tokyo. We on a war tour with Mob and my man. Going each and every city with the mic in the hand. Houston, Delaware, DC, Dallas.
Back in 89, I simply slid into place. Buddy, 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 all up in your face. A lot of kids was busting rhymes, but they had no taste. Some said Quest was whack, but now is that the case? I have a quest to have a mic in my hand. Without that, it's like Kryptonite and Superman. So Shahid come in with the sugar cut. Fife throws my name, but on stage call me Dynamite. When was the last time you heard the Fife was sloppy? Lyrics anonymous, you never hear me copy. Top notch, baby, never coming less. God's the limit, you got to believe up in Quest. Sit back, relax, get up out the path. It's not that. Come move that. Non-believers, you can check the stats. I roll with Shahid and the brother Abstract. Know the time when Quest is in the jam. I never let a statue tell me how nice I am. Coming with more hits than the Braves and the Yankees. Living mad fat like a whole oversized MP. The wackest crews trying to diss it makes me laugh. With my track record longer than a DC-20 aircraft. The next time that you think you want something here, make something different, take that garbage to say elsewhere.
We are on a war tour with Mohammed and my man. Going each and every day, shoot the mic in the hand. SC Allen, you on Motown. We on a war tour with Mohammed and my man. Going each and every day, shoot the mic in the hand. Chinatown, Spokane, London, Tokyo. We on a war tour with Mohammed and my man. Going each and every day, shoot the mic in the hand. Houston, Delaware, DC, Dallas.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmags.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. Thanks for being here. Kevin Barnett in with Reed Pretty and DJ Roche.
Is that your smooth jazz voice?
DJ Roche, if they want to hire you for their party because they love the Groovin' Tunes, first of all, they better get some scratch together. But secondly, where would they go to do that?
Multiple places, but they can go to DJRouche.com. It's DJRoueche.com. All my information is on there.
Okay. DJ Roche.
Yep. Roche.
Roche. Roche.com.
Roche. Whatever you want.
Check it out if you want to hire DJ Roche for your next party, your next get-together with you and 75 of your closest friends. Hey, we have Jennifer Thomas coming up. Thomas. Why is it every time? Every time.
Just keep saying
I'm trying to say Thomas, and I keep saying Thomas. Jen Joins was a lot easier. Can we go back to Jen Joins, please?
Well, we used to call Chris Thomas. I think
that's why.
Where, yeah.
Her husband played on the national team for a while.
Yep.
He is actually an assistant coach at Minnesota now, awaiting Q's arrival, along with Alfie Reft, who left the national team and a libero career to become a coach there.
Yeah. I think that's where it all comes from.
That must be it. And was I calling the wrong name forever? I mean, I called Phil Etherton for about 7 years before he told me, by the way, it's Etherton. So that was the real question. But all right, we will get to her in just a moment. I understand on the chat board they're getting off on the referee issue here. They're getting off on the referee thing and complaining back and forth about it. Seen any of that, Jeremy?
They're just talking about how they would adopt the
system?
Yeah.
See, somebody made a good point about the portability of the stuff. I think nowadays, you could take that stuff anywhere, right? It's like anything else. Everything has shrunken. This show, what it takes to run this show, would have been a huge room full of equipment 15 years ago. Now it's some portable stuff we throw in the back of the car.
Yep.
Same thing with these systems. I mean, you could shoot the lines with the cameras and have the computers and have the video monitors and all that stuff. I think it's really easy.
Definitely easier for tennis and the NFL because it's a stationary location. But, you know, ESPN travels all over the world shooting events. They can bring some instant replay cameras with them, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they can handle it. ESPN, they're putting out some bids for Olympics and that kind of stuff. So I think they've got a few bucks.
I agree.
No, I think it would be easy to do. People make a good point that at Wimbledon it can be there, at the NFL it can be in the stadium, but I think this is stuff that could go with it. I think it would improve the integrity of the game. I think that the broadcasters and the FIVB need to look at that. Reed, how are we doing? We live here? Waiting on our next guest.
This is just special
call-in.
Mr. Gardhoff.
Oh. Did they give you a break at work? What happened, Matt Gardhoff, that you're giving us a call?
I did. I escaped a little bit for lunch here.
Beautiful. What do you have for us?
Oh, man, I just wanted to thank you guys for stopping by the tailgate the other week. That was real nice to have you and the former member Dan out there helping us out. And I think it was pretty cool for our crew when the U.S. bus came around the corner there and saw the tailgate, and they all started beating on the windows. I think we need a little bit more of that.
Nice. Yeah, your effort was certainly something that we do need a lot more of. Now, you had described what you wanted to do to the powers that be. You wanted to have a motorhome out there and a few pop-up tents and a grill going out in the middle of a parking lot that's just enormous on the campus of Long Beach State University. What kind of resistance did you encounter, and who eventually said, okay, you can actually come and tailgate this event?
You know, I wish I had a good answer to that question. Knowing it was on a college campus and all that, we tried to sort of go through the proper channels, and I don't really know exactly what they are, but I talked to USAV, and I think they said Long Beach State were the people who control that sort of thing, and had a couple friends who said they knew people in that athletic office, and at first we were told no, and then a buddy of mine said he spoke to somebody there who said yes. So I moved the whole tailgate, and then I asked him, I said, okay, where's the permit? He's like, no, it was more of a verbal arrangement. So I said, okay, well, that's good enough for us. Well, if they want to move all 70 people in an RV, they can do that. But I wasn't going to fit that many people in my house, so we had it right there, and it went off great. No one sweated us at all, and just had a great time, and it was a great match. It was just a lot of fun.
Well, cool. I know the players certainly appreciated not only the stuff going on outside, but also your enthusiasm inside with the triangle hat, the colonial coat, and the giant American flag waving, because that was a stark change from Friday night's event in Long Beach, which included a monstrous 20 by 30 or larger Puerto Rican flag over part of the stands.
Yeah, I really didn't like that on Friday night. I said, we're definitely taking over the end zone because that can't happen. I mean, you know, you expect the Polish fans in Chicago, but not in Southern California. That can't happen. So I think we represented pretty well. I'm still bummed we didn't get the wave going. In hindsight, would have started that.
Awesome. We appreciate your enthusiasm for this show and your enthusiasm for the national teams. Matt, we need more guys like you out there getting it done.
Absolutely. You guys have a great show.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Talk to you. Bye.
Matt Gardhoff. Hey, you can check out his work. He's mattgardhoff.com/thenetlive. Or at least on his site, you can find it. There is some funny stuff with dolls. There's a 1994 Karch. There's Sean Scott.
April Ross is great.
Yeah. There's some funny videos and some really inside knowledge for those of you that know the sport well. There's some funny stuff from our Netty Awards, from our year-end awards, where they were having a red carpet event with the dolls, and then all of a sudden they went, oh, Scott Akintevi arriving out of a limo. That's a good idea. little stuff like that that you have to know the history of the sport in order to really understand.
He said on the chat board that if the national team comes back to the pyramid, he's going to buy 100-plus tickets for next time.
I like it. I like it a lot.
It's commitment.
Hey, he bought 40. He sold them out. That's
awesome.
Yeah, that was something else. All right, Reed, I see that we have our next guest.
Oh, interesting.
That means it's your time, Jeremy. There we go.
Let it roll over you for a sec, Kevin.
I want to feel the flow.
Yep.
I came in here kind of dour because my plans got all messed up for the day.
There you go.
Just making me feel better. Our next guest is a silver medalist, a longtime member of the national team. She's played middle blocker and been dominant. She was a super sub in Beijing, came in and played a huge role for that squad. She's still getting it done at the national team level. She's married to some guy I used to play with, but I couldn't pronounce his name. Chris Thomas, assistant coach in Minnesota. Welcome in, please, Jen Thomas. Jen, thanks
Hello.
For joining. All right, we've been having this debate.
Hi, nice to be here.
Actually, mostly internally we've been having this debate, and by we, I mean me. Thomas or Thomas? I called Chris Thomas for years, and I just can't get that out of my head. It's Thomas?
You know what's so funny is that Chris and I were best friends for 10 years before we got married, and I called him Thomas, and now it's my last name, so I have to say it appropriately. It's Thomas.
Okay.
But, so yeah, for so long I called him Thomas, and... But, yeah, it's actually Thomas.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, I don't feel so bad anymore. I appreciate that. Thank you, Jen. Hey, Jen, your team is coming off a trip in the Pan American Cup down to Mexico, where you end up finishing third, took home a bronze medal and a 3-0 victory over Cuba. Tell us a little bit about that event, and in particular the bronze medal match.
Sure. Well, the Pan Am Cup is a great tournament for us to get a chance to play against people in our zone. We have to push through them to be able to qualify for the Olympics. And we had a couple teams outside of our zone, Brazil, Argentina. And so it's great to get matches in with Brazil. The more times we can play against, you know, the team that beat us in the finals in Beijing, the better. We went 5 with them. I thought it was a great match. It was their starters. A lot of their main players from the last Olympics and into this year, everyone was there. And we went 5 with them, lost the heartbreaker to the Dominican Republic. They're a feisty team, and we had more unforced errors that match than we had the entire tournament, I think. So that was sort of a soul crusher for us. But the next match, we were able to play against Cuba and really do a good job, I think, and 3 against them. So that was nice, but... I guess my regret is not being able to push past Brazil. I think that we had great opportunities to be able to beat them. And the Dominican Republic, we weren't as focused as we had been in other matches that tournament.
Yeah, the powerhouses in the women's game, Brazil, Russia, very good teams. Talk about what Brazil does really well. What part of their game do you guys look at and just go, this is something we have to focus on?
Sure. With Brazil, we have mostly 4 attackers at all times. Their bick is a huge part of their offense when they have 3 in the front. And the 2-hitter, they've got the live D and also a bick. I mean, they shoot so much in the back row. I think that when we play against Brazil, it looks more like what we see when we watch the men's volleyball teams play, which is huge offense out of the back row, just as effective as the front. So we have to be really on our toes as blockers and defense.
Now, this tournament was played down in Ciudad Juarez. Correct? This
is Juarez, Mexico.
We've heard a lot about this place on the news in regards to the drug wars and the problems that are happening there in Mexico that I understand are creeping even into cities like Puerto Vallarta, where I spend time, that typically have been untouched. How was the security at this event, and how did you guys feel the entire time you were there?
Well, we went in not really knowing what to expect. When we Googled Juarez, Mexico, the first thing that came up on Wikipedia was that it was one of the top cities with violence, you know, in the world. And so we were a little bit cautious. I have to say, though, that it was probably one of my favorite Pan American Cup tournaments. Juarez really put on a good tournament. Everything was clean. The food was really good. The hotel was really nice. It looked sort of like a resort hotel. And so I think the community really put a lot into it to, you know, sort of change the perception of what Juarez is. And I'll say positive things from here on out about that city. They did a great job.
That's terrific to hear. It didn't seem like you guys were at all at ill ease throughout that tournament. And I look back at your match against Costa Rica, because you mentioned the tough competition you faced, but you also end up with some of these matches where you're playing teams that are simply overmatched. And I looked at the scores, and I just wonder how in today's scoring, Rally 25, you hang an 8 on Costa Rica. How do you do that? You put a 10 on them, you put an 8 on them. It's just, that's an absolute decimation. I mean, do you just get bored at some point, let them side out for fun?
You know, gosh, the rally score actually will come up and get you. That was one match that we kept our unforced errors to such a minimum, and our servers did a great job the whole tournament, keeping a lot of balls in. I was a huge focus for me was just an aggressive serve to a spot, to a seam, and was able to come out without any missed serves for the whole tournament, which was was a huge goal for me, and I was really happy, excited to hit that. But, yeah, that was the trick, is just low numbers of errors, you know, try to get the pass, hittable balls for all the hitters, keep our errors down. But it's tough against those other teams, though, because they have such physical athletes. They just don't have the amount of, I don't know, training or something. Their ball control isn't as good. The attackers come from really crazy angles, and they do a lot of, I don't know, I guess the best way to explain it is some weird stuff. But they hit at such a high point that we have to be really, really disciplined. Because we're seeing shots that we've never seen in our life, you know, stuff off their wrist from 11 feet in the air, yeah. It felt like. So, you know, it's just, you have to be really focused.
Unorthodox and unpredictable, and it's tough to sometimes hold
your
attention just like that.
Those are the exact words. Unorthodox, unpredictable. Great words to describe those matches.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We're talking to Jen Thomas, middle blocker for the USA national team. Jen, as players get older in their career and get on, and a lot of the stuff that they used to focus on and have to worry about in matches, in practices, as far as skills go, just kind of becomes almost a reflex. And so you begin to be able to refine your game in so many small ways. What are some of the areas that you're really working on refining your game?
Well, like I said a little bit ago, the one focus that I've had is to be good at the service line. I think that when I'm back there serving, we have a great rotation of front row attackers and blockers. So my goal is to get the team out of system on the other side, because we have such a huge block in that rotation. And my hope is to be back there more than 3 serves in a row. You know, I want to have a long rotation at the service line. So that's a focus. Also, balls that come off the block in the net, in the 10-foot line. The reflex, like you said, I don't have to think about it as much, but being in the right spot, coming down, playing those balls that get in between us and the net. And then also just, you know, if our setter digs a good ball, being able to get a hittable ball to my pins and to the back row. For me to be able to put up a good set consistently anytime the setter digs is a focus. Serving, second ball, that's what I would say, are my focuses right now.
I like it, because even with the number of years you have on the national team and the success you've had, it really comes down to some basic stuff, like getting a hittable ball up there for somebody. I think that sometimes kids lose sight of that. They want to make the spectacular play, and you lose sight of how valuable a hittable ball can really be.
Hittable ball to the right person. And, you know, one thing that the other girls are focusing on, that we're getting a little quiet when it is a non-setter setting. We want to have people calling for the ball, screaming to have that attack. And we talked about Brazil earlier. One thing that they do great when the middle blocker is setting, when the libero is setting, everyone's screaming for that ball. You hear all of the hitters on the court screaming out for that set, and that's one area we can improve on, because it helps me to see who's available, who's ready, who's in a good position, who wants his ball. So little areas of focus for us.
You guys are working with a lot of really young players in that squad, and a lot of, lack of a better term, really old players, experienced players.
It's true.
So talk a little about that interplay, and you guys are bringing on some kids who have come from college with a lot of success and a lot of stuff behind them, and I imagine a lot of confidence in themselves, their abilities, those of the younger players that are coming with them from the college system. Talk about that interplay between the grizzled veterans and the new young talent.
one thing that's really nice to see for us, for our team, and I noticed it a lot from the get-go of this training block, the volleyball IQs of the entire team have gone up. And I think that that's an effect from the coaching staff at, really educating all of us, and especially the young girls that just came in. I mean, international volleyball IQ is different than a collegiate volleyball IQ. And there's been so much growth from our young girls coming to now. And so the veterans on the team, the older girls, the grandmas, we don't have to, you know, there isn't so much of, we don't have to be as, we're not reminding all the time. You know, the girls are front-loading the play a lot more than they used to. So now the veterans can just sort of be aggressive and not have to worry about that mental part of the game anymore. You know, the reminders, you know, that you give the younger girls off-blocker tip and make, you know, little things like that. Now they're talking about it and reminding us. So it's great. But I think our volleyball IQ has improved, and that's because the young girls have taken the time in their professional seasons to put what we do with USA Volleyball to work overseas, and they brought it back even at a higher level.
Do you notice any differences from the women who are having perhaps their first or maybe second experiences overseas when they return to the national team gym? I know I always had a new appreciation for the U.S. gym when I had been in a foreign gym for 6 or 7 months.
It really changes you. It really changes you. The young ones that came in from college, their first season with the USA team, then they finally play that first professional season. And there's a lot more expectations on them as the professional. You know, you have to be the high point scorer. You've got a fan of fans that are your fans when things are going well, but not so positive when things aren't. And so I think that your backbone really gets a lot stronger when you're playing overseas. And so the girls are a lot more mentally tough now after those first couple seasons of playing professionally. And I think that our team, I don't know what we did overseas, but our young outsides are passing balls right now. We were in system so many times in Pan American Cup. It was so nice to see. That was never our concern, was that we were getting aced too much or that we weren't passing a hittable ball. It was great. I mean, I think that was one of our struggles in World Championships, and we were rocky at times during the Grand Prix, but passing has been great.
You guys have had incredible results under new coach Hugh McCutchen, and you've been through a number of coaches on the national team. Talk about your reaction to Hugh McCutchen's system and how you think the implementation process is going and some of the changes that he's asking you, not only the older guys or older gals, but the younger to also make.
Okay. In the beginning, my husband and I, Chris has been coached by Hugh. When he put in a lot of years with the national team and was a part of the system. So he would attest that in the beginning I had troubles with the new system. I didn't understand why we would never put somebody on a hitting box and do hitting drills where the coaches are on a box, going against the block and having defense, you know, repeatedly working on the same shot. And Chris said, you need to be patient, Jen. You need to understand that, you know, that's sort of an unrealistic angle. It's never going to happen. Game reps are going to be valuable. If you're playing in a game against each other, if it's 6-on-6 more than a coach on a box, you are going to read better. It's, you know, your volleyball IQ is going to get better. And that first year, and it was actually last summer because I took some time off the first year after the Olympics. Last year it was tough for me in the beginning. I felt like we were missing out on some areas because we weren't drilling. We weren't, you know, practicing our rolling. I mean, you know, the stuff that we did in Asian volleyball systems but from the past. But it's all paid off. And I'm glad I listened to my husband, and I'm glad that I trusted the coaching staff. And I feel like I've come a long way as a player. And, you know, in the past, we didn't do 6-on-6 until the very end of the week. We put it all together on a Saturday, and we finally were able to play each other. Now, we're playing every single day. We do some drills in the beginning. A coach is never initiating the ball besides a free ball to the team, but it's always 6-on-6 style drills. And I think that we've just become a lot more well-rounded, and we're using our eyeballs a lot more because the drill isn't sort of, you know, okay, we're going to see this shot 10 times in a row. So it's just automatic. Okay, I know it's going to go to my left. I'm going to run it down to my left every single time. in a six-on-six drill with our coaches. It's random, and that's what games are like.
It's interesting you make that comment about the pushback against you, and I think I saw that on the national team in 05, 06 before they really gelled in the last couple of years before the Olympic Games. The same issues with Hugh and some of the things that he was trying and implementing. And one of the things he did was have a great consistency of message. Now, not everyone on your team has a man like your husband in your ear all the time about to be patient, be patient. So what did the process look like for the other women on your team? Where do they go? Or what were the internal discussions like as a group as it related to the changes that were being requested?
Yeah, we definitely had some conversations. Well, you know, Hugh has been really great, though, and Karch also, that if we say, look, we need to work on, you know, set or dump, for example. We've been struggling because we don't dump as much in our gym. We like to set the hitters a lot, and so the setter doesn't have as much freedom in practice in six-on-six drills to dump. And in the women's game, especially when you're playing against a team like China, that's part of their offense. So the middle blocker's hands have to be high, and if we're not doing it in practice, it's difficult to get after it in the game. You know, it's like, oh, the dump, that's right. So, you know, we'll come back to the gym, and we'll do a drill where the middle blockers have to have their hands high in a drill and, you know, sort of front-loading, okay, yes, the dump when we're playing against a team like China. So they're receptive to if someone says, I'm having trouble with this, can we do a drill? You'll get maybe 5-10 minutes with it, but you're at least doing it. But then it's, of course, you know, a lot of six-on-six after that. We did have conversations, though, early on where open conversations, look, you know, we don't feel like we're drilling this out, this or that out enough. And the coaches at times would say, okay, let's do it. Other times, nope, you don't need to. You don't have to practice, you know, running and diving in order to do it.
Right.
You know, you don't have to practice rolling over your shoulder in order to do it. And it was a transition for us, but I think that especially last year at Grand Prix World Championships, we realized, you know, what our coaches are telling us is correct. Six on six is going to pay off in dividends for us more than drilling out a certain play.
Is this a strange sort of idea? Is women's volleyball a more regimented work on the individual skills, and you have to be able to roll and you have to be able to make this one movement in a controlled situation? Is that something that's cultural beyond just the national team in your experience all the way down through the college ranks?
Well, I think that Toshi brought in a system that was a lot of drill work, a lot of focus on the fundamentals broken down by the coaches. And that did trickle down into the, you know, he put on a lot of camps and did a lot of workshops with coaches. A lot of people came to those. And I think that trickled down into the club level. And I'd like to think that what we do on the national team does trickle down. I see a lot of the coaches signing up for our clinics and doing what the national team does. It helps us, certainly, when coaches are teaching their players something similar to what we are doing. I would like to think that we set the standard, because then when they come into our gym, it's not a complete breakdown process for them. They're sort of, okay, yeah, we did this too in college. But I think that Toshi affected the training a lot of the younger girls. There was a lot of drills. And I think that you need that at a young age. You do need drills. It can't just be six-on-six, or you're going to have really low-level six-on-six drills. You know, at the national level, when you're six-on-six, it's high level. But when you're young and you're just learning how to serve and you're just learning how to pass, you got to break it down a lot more for them. But as far as the male-female difference in volleyball, gosh, I don't know. Did you like six-on-six more than drills?
I hate.
What was your take?
Yeah, I wanted.
You hate drills?
Oh, man. Doug Beal had us doing endless drills and jump training and stuff, and I always wanted to play more. And then you saw
the human
system come in, and it was, like you're talking about, it's kind of a blend between my vision of Al Skates and his coaching the men's game at UCLA, where they just play all the time. There's such a low emphasis on drills. I don't know, that's maybe the other way. But then you, Doug, where we played drills all the time, and it was like, can't we just play the sport? I mean,
I just want to play. Yeah, like come Saturday, it was like, oh yeah, this is volleyball. This is why we're here. There's actually points, and then now I feel like I'm a part of a team instead of.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait for Saturday. But you know what I really like about the new system is that it's brought the competitor out in me a lot more. I get to compete every single day in a six-on-six environment, and that's why we play volleyball, is for the game. Not a rolling over my shoulder to the left to the right drill.
right.
to compete and to play. So for me, it's gotten, I'd like to say, you know, I have a lot of fun now. And I think that's important for the veterans. You know, if you're having fun, you know, that's why we're still in it. You know, it's competitive and it's fun. And I feel like Hugh's brought that out a lot more.
It's a job. It's got to be fun, and you are still in it. But your relationship with Hugh McCutcheon is going to be an ongoing thing as your husband. We mentioned before Chris Thomas, who has been hired as an assistant at Minnesota, awaiting Hugh's arrival after the 2012 Olympics. Talk about your thoughts for your own career and situation. You're obviously headed to Minnesota after the Olympic Games. So are you going to continue professionally? What's the plan?
Well, my understanding is that Chris is sort of just an intern for Hugh. So when Hugh gets there, they're going to be coaching together for a little bit, and then for that season, which is about 3 months, and then from there we'll see what happens. But our thinking is that Chris is going to be there up until that season, coach that season together with Hugh and everyone that's there, Laura and Alfie, and then look for maybe another place to go. And he has an apartment. He's living in a dorm situation, actually. He's sharing a room with Alfie in Minnesota. So, no, I won't be moving to Minnesota. I think I'm going to do one more professional season after 2012, see how the body feels. I know that Chris and I, a huge thing for us is we want to start a family. I'd love to be able to do it all, but being a female in this sport, you have to make sometimes personal sacrifices. I'd play forever if I could, but I want a family as well. So it's one thing I think maybe the men take for granted is that they can do it all. I don't know if they take it for granted, but I hope they don't, because I wish I could play and you know, have a family.
Well, that's great if he takes it for granted later. Hey, Jen, we appreciate your time here on the show, and we want to get you out of here on this. Tell us
all right.
what to watch. You have Grand Prix coming up. It's going to be on Universal Sports. People out there who are fans, tune in and watch your team. What are they going to be tuning into? What should they expect to see?
I think one of the things people were commenting about our team last year is our passing was rocky. I think one thing to look at is we've come a long way. Our passers are passing such great balls, and fans also realize that those serves are coming at such high speeds, and they're doing their damn heart I shouldn't say that they're doing their hardest to get those balls to the center. And I think one thing you're going to see is the support that we have as a team. I think we have great chemistry right now, and that pass is getting to the setter a lot more than it did last year, and it's opening us up as hitters. So that's something to see.
Well, I think you mentioned it, that you guys are having fun in practice. The veterans are having a good time. It has to be that way, and I hope that comes across on the broadcast. People expect to see a team having a good time and having success as you did last year. We wish you the best of luck. We look forward to seeing the rest of the season as you guys head toward Olympic qualification. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
It was great having you. Anytime. Come on back.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye. All right. Jen Thomas, women's national team middle blocker. Wily veteran by this point. She's taking it back to Toshi, for those out there that don't know that. That's three administrations ago.
And I guess you're let off the hook if she even messed up her own name. Her
right.
eventual own name.
That's right, so it's okay. And I've got Thomas. You had it written down in front of me here now. I'm going to have to keep that. The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We'll be right back. A bit more to come. We're gonna get into some more discussions here, gentlemen. Let people know what's going on in the volleyball world. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Net Live, welcome back in. Jeremy, who's this?
Just kidding.
Come on now.
Stones, I actually know.
DJ Stones. Rolling Stones.
My gosh. Well, hey, we're going to talk a little bit about the Jen Thomas, Thomas interview that we just concluded.
So unprofessional.
Here on the show, we've had World League, we've had Pan American Cup, we've had the FIVB, lots of stuff. I want to talk about some of the things that Jen touched on. But first, we have a heartfelt message from Reed Pretty. Feel it, Reed. Feel it before you get into it. Just, I know you're just taking it in. Compose your thoughts,
you know,
and get the message out there to the man you want to reach.
You know, I'm back on the show. I heard that there was some tension between me and a great name, Kent Steffes. It's now a part of the intro. I hear it at every event that I've been at where the commercial's been played. I just want to clear the air. I'm not a confrontational kind of guy.
No, you want to hug it out.
I don't know where we crossed lines, but somewhere they got crossed. And, it's hurtful for me to continue to move forward without resolution. And
so what do you want?
I want him to call in. I want to talk it out. I want to see where we went wrong. You know, I think it was in regards to the, removal of eras. If Todd and Phil played Karch and Kent, who would win? I think it was somewhere in that discussion where we seemed to lose the foundation, the relational foundation that we had.
Kent Steffes, 347-677-1525. This is just for you. You can even get Reed to screen your call. You don't even have to be on air. You can just, if I see Reed break into tears of joy because he's repaired his relationship with you, I'll know that all is right with Mr. Pretty and he can continue with his national team career. It all hangs in the balance, Kent, on your call right now.
Maybe we lost him as a listener. Maybe it happened last week when you started talking about your white iPhone. Maybe it's when the AVP went down under and we have no professional league as it is. We have events. I don't know. Maybe it's just an overall indication of where we're headed as a sport. And since we're headed there as a sport, are we headed there as a show?
Is the show headed down?
Speaking of that, 2011, serious question here. Let's segue here. Serious question. Where are we at in the States with volleyball in 2011? Where are we at? What
disarray.
What's our condition?
Dysfunction. We need a therapist. We've got several people fighting over a very small pie. IMG USAV, NVL, Corona Light Wide Open, AVP. Fighting over what once was a commercial featuring the sport of beach volleyball. We have the indoor teams who dominated in 2008. And for that matter, the beach teams, but on the indoor side, silver and a gold. 3 weeks later, after Reed and Rich were done being on TMZ, nobody cared anymore.
Was that the highlight of our exposure, by the way?
That was big, yep. You walking out of a club in Hollywood with your medal on, getting made fun of by TMZ.
Now, we did the Bonnie Hunt show, but I think TMZ tops it.
Yeah, Bonnie's nice and all. She doesn't have the wow factor of TMZ.
That was the extent of our post-Olympic gold exposure right there.
You know, I actually think on the indoor side, the juniors is healthy. College is healthy on the women's side. Men's is just stifled by stuff we've gone into here before. I think the indoor side of the game is reasonably healthy. The beach concerns me. But it's going to sort itself out. It's going to be at a level eventually, but never back to the early 90s. I really wanted to believe that the sport could reachieve that zenith, that pinnacle of like 1993. But I'm sorry to say, and I'm here to tell you now, that it's not coming back. Never again will you see beach players earning $800,000 in prize money.
Is that the problem?
Never.
That we think we're going to get back to that point? Or that's what people's goal
is? Lots of people think that that's possible. There's no way it's ever going to happen. If it ever happened, I would cheer it. I don't cheer against it, but it is not going to happen. That ball of coolness, that it factor, rolls forward. It does not roll backwards. It has gone elsewhere. It's not coming back. Is beach volleyball a sport that can find itself in a way that it can have some professional aspect to it here in this country? Sure. Will it ever be to that level again? No. I'd almost hesitate to say we're going to get back to the 2005 or 6 level, where it was on TV a variety of times, players were making a decent living, they had sponsors. When you tell me that Sean Scott and John Hyden have zero sponsors, from John Hyden's own mouth, zero sponsors, they are the second best men's team in the game. And Phil Dahlhauser, who's the best player in America, perhaps in the world, and by perhaps I mean certainly, and he doesn't have an apparel deal. That tells you what you need to know about that sport and where it's at. And I'm sorry to the people that really like it, that think that it has this tremendous commercial ability. I disagree. AVP went away, left a huge hole, theoretically a huge hole for some other tour to fill. The tour that had operating business already, Corona Light wide open, contracted. Fewer tournaments than the year before because they are a business. So that tells me business is bad. I wish it wasn't that way.
It's just depressing.
No doubt.
Just suck the wind right out of the room.
Well, I
the
keep
truth
saying,
hurts on this show. You know, that's what we're about.
Beach volleyball in the United States is starting over again. Like it's a brand new sport.
Again.
Yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I think next year with the Olympic buzz will help. Especially if we do well in the Olympics, that'll help too.
It helps for that period of time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It'll help then, and maybe it'll bring some more eyes to the sport during that time, and who knows what that'll mean past 2012.
Just think if the AVP was healthy right now and flourishing, and we had this pro tour, and we've got these lockouts, and you know Vince Carter decides to lace up a pair of board shorts instead of a pair of Nikes. And
no doubt.
Start recruiting those guys.
There'd be some fun opportunities if it was really a viable thing. That's a great point.
Who's Reed calling from the NBA first to see if he wants to side out on the beach with him?
I wonder how many people Reed has in his phone, in his black iPhone. How many?
He hasn't name dropped like Geeter normally does.
No, Geeter's got my name. So. You know, the one area of the sport that should be making money is our show.
Speaking of.
Next week, Reed?
Friday, I'm supposed to get the T-shirts.
The NetLive T-shirts. If you want to support this program.
Big thanks to Hurley for making that happen.
We're going to give you a way to do it. You're going to be able to sport the NetLive T-shirt when you're out playing on the beach for no money. Or when you're out playing indoors in the middle of the summer when you should be outside. When you're doing those things, you can sport the NetLive T-shirt and say that you are a supporter of this program. So more news on that coming soon. But they're nice, dude. I've got one in my hand right now.
And coming from somebody that likes to look hip and wear cool clothes, I will wear the NetLive shirt.
Nice.
And awesome. Not just because I'm involved.
The faux hawk and a NetLive
yep.
T-shirt. That's what I'd like to hear.
That'll get you at least one sale from me.
Let's talk a little bit about Jen Thomas. Let's talk about Jen Thomas and her comments.
Unbelievable interview. She, you can clearly see the Hewisms and the seriousness, the attention to detail, the drinking of the Kool-Aid, as you like to say. And anytime you have a middle blocker saying that she wants to improve her serving and her second ball touches, to me, that spoke volumes because. Especially when we talk about the specialization of the sport and you've got these middle blockers coming up and all they do is spike and hit. And here is somebody who is a captain of the team and at the top of her game, focusing on what many people would think would be a small thing. And Hugh would always say there are no small things. And so for her to identify two areas of her game seems very team oriented. And it seems like the culture on that team is only improving. And I just think it's a great sign to have those two things be identified by their captain. I think that's just phenomenal.
I think the get off the box quote was a good one. And an idea of the change in the way that the game is taught and the practices are run. There's no value in having a coach on a box at the national team level. Maybe not no value. Less value than some of the other things you can do. And Jen touched on the fact that the ball is hit repetitively to the same spot over and over and over and over and over. And the ability to practice that one little movement. Well, that one little movement doesn't happen in matches. It's complicated. You have the blockers moving. You have the ball moving. You have an unpredictable hitter on the other side. And the more you see that unpredictability in the system as a whole, because by the time you get to the national team, you ought to be able to see some of that. The more you see that unpredictability as a whole, the better you're going to be at reacting to that unpredictability. To be good at reacting to a set situation that never occurs, no one is ever standing in a static spot hitting a ball, that's worthless.
Well, and at that level, too, I mean, when you're on the national team, you've done all those drills your whole life. If you don't know them by then, you should probably wouldn't be on the national team, would be my guess.
Hopefully. Although there are some exceptions, athletes that are coming late to the game, but yes. But that's part of the thing, is that's the way the game is taught. I always thought that was one of the geniuses of Al Skates, is that his teams played volleyball so well. They would make some technical errors, and this, I think, is one of the reasons that you see UCLA athletes not do well at the next level when it comes to the men's side of the game. Name a UCLA athlete who has had a significant impact on the national team since Eric Sullivan. Name one before. Mike Seeley, maybe? All those great teams they had. Brandon Taliaferro was on the team for a little bit. But really, they have not had a whole lot of athletes compared to the success that they've had in the college level. And I think that's because they're not teaching and correcting a lot of different parts of the game of players. I think that they're just playing, they're teaching players to play the game. And what happens is they can play the game at that level very well. But once they come to the national team, it's a whole nother deal. And they don't have the technical skills to keep them in the gym to allow them to learn to play at the international level. And I think that's where you have to have a blend when you talk about a teaching program like McGowan at BYU when he was there, or Dunphy at Pepperdine still currently, or a Spira at UC Irvine. You have a lot of these coaches now, Rick McLaughlin at Santa Barbara, who can teach. And I think that's important. So you're going to do some of that stuff at that lower level, but when you come to the national team, you better be able to learn to play. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that Hugh McCutchen does, is keep that focus. And he's really good at the consistent messaging of what you're trying to accomplish in the communication. You heard Jen talk about that communication. That's so vitally important between a coaching staff and players today. We have a caller. We'd love to go to callers when we have them. Scott in Michigan, you want to get back to the beach. Tell us.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that everybody keeps forgetting about why beach was so big in the 90s, which was when I first got involved, is the fans. I think everybody talks about the players and what the players don't have and the contraction, but the whole sport has started from the regional level, from the regional tours like Dig the Beach and Chris Colgan and our tour up in Michigan and Rich Hiles on the East Coast. That's where a lot of the guys outside of Southern California were born from, like the Vince Wheaton family or Brent Doble and some of the guys that came from Michigan and the Midwest. And I think what's happening is that everybody's so focused on such a small group of the top players that they're not developing any players whatsoever from the bottom up. And talking with guys like Todd, there is such a huge gap between the U.S.'s top guys and who they're playing on the FIVB, where these 22, 23, 25-year-old guys, like Alisson is 25.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just so far behind the curve there after the 12 Olympics that I think we have to start over. But I really... the fans are the people who are going to regrow the sport, and we have to look at the sport and the athleticism of the sport. It seems like everybody who starts these tours are worried about the lifestyle. You know, when you go to the beach, there is a lifestyle there already. You have good-looking guys and good-looking girls out there. You know, now what you have to do is sell the quality of the sport. Whenever I went to watch it, I went to watch Karch or Kent or Avendad and those guys play the game. I didn't go there to see a bunch of drunk people act like idiots. I went to watch a wonderfully fascinating entertainment sport played. And I think everybody's trying to cheapen the thing by selling everything other than the sport itself. And if we get back to those roots and worry less about TV, if you look at the AVP's past financial troubles, most of it was revolved around paying huge sums of money for TV exposure. as opposed to, you know, you or I can go on line, Kevin, and watch the FIVB for $10 or $12 for a season.
Sure.
And
Scott, let me take you back for a second. Let me take you back because I think you raised a couple of important things, but I think they're a little bit disparate, and I want people to focus in on this. When you're talking about the fans coming from the regional level and the importance of that to the game, and we're just talking about volleyball people at this point. We're not talking about fans in general, sporting fans. What are we doing as a sport collectively to create new fans of the sport?
Absolutely nothing.
There you go. I think that's a huge problem. People play, but even those that play are not huge fans. Is that in your touch with your region? Do you think that's an accurate statement?
You know, we try, you know, I think it's a very accurate statement, Kevin. What we're trying to do in our region and working with some of the other region is doing camps, is allowing special fees to college kids who don't have that much money, who may play indoor club, to get them out and to play, to do free clinics, to, you know, you get an indoor guy or girl that's used to six, and you get them on the beach, and they don't know where they are. You know, it's a whole new game to them. So if they're used to being successful indoor, you know, their immediate success on the beach is probably not very likely, and I think a lot of players get frustrated before they have a chance to get really good at it, and they just quit playing before they actually take the whole, you know, absorb the whole conversion. But
yeah.
I used to run the AVP events in the 90s. We were the smallest market in the country in Grand Haven, Michigan, with 50,000 people in our town in the summer, about 20,000 in the winter, and we'd have 15 or 17,000 people through gated people who paid
right
back in the mid 90s, you know, $15 to $80 for a ticket because they were fans of the sport and it was a value. I mean, you know, you go to a, you know, any pro sport and it's $75, $100 for a mediocre seat, you know.
Well, that's,
and so
that's
it was
the other side. That's the other side you're coming down on about the professional aspect of things and the quality of players that are out there and the disparate quality of players that are out there. And so you're coming down on the professional side where you think it's less a lifestyle and more a professional sport. You think you can draw just on the sport itself? Is there enough depth to beach volleyball for people to not only become fans of the sport but then get into beach itself?
It just depends on how it's marketed. You know, I think if you market it as a party, it becomes a party. If you market it as a sport, you know, it can be sold for the quality of the athleticism. And you've seen what's happened with different styles of athletes trying to play beach volleyball. They find out it's, you know, these guys are in shape, it's this or that. Or,
right.
But I think that the other thing is there's no, I mean, back in, I would say, my era, if you would, you had guys like St. John and Tarch and these guys coming into town 3 or 4 days before an event to hit every surf shop, clinic, anything they could, volleyball club, to promote the sport, to get them to come out. Now all you got these guys doing is calling and asking you for tee times, you know?
Right.
And that doesn't promote the sport either, yet they all complain they don't have sponsor contracts and they don't have this and they don't have that. But, you know, it's really kind of getting what you asked for, really. It's sad that Phil and doesn't have a clothing deal, you know. He should have, but I mean, you know, it's a situation too that I think why indoor is so successful and the people, at least from the club level, is so successful is because people see the growth, the ability to get scholarships. They can go to a lot of these high performance camps nationally if they want to get the kind of direction they want, run by really high quality people. We don't have that on the beach, I don't think. And that's where I think that we've got this great big, huge gap, number one. And number two is there's no star quality, unfortunately, for Todd and Phil as well as they do. They're probably, you know, much more well known in Europe and in those areas than they are in their own country, which is
a sad
synopsis.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate the information. Give us a call another time for sure.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Hey, Scott brings up a couple of good points, I think, talking about the professional athlete lifestyle. And I think this proliferation of what it is to be a professional athlete has gotten all the way down to the beach volleyball players. And the beach volleyball players, I think, are not, or didn't. I think they do now. But I think there's been a time where some of them didn't understand what it really took to make their sport successful, because their image of an NBA player, of an NFL player, of all these other folks that have this huge support network of a professional league and publicists and a marketing machine behind them allow the players to simply play. No extra marketing, no sitting in grocery stores signing autographs, no going to surf shops and that kind of stuff that Scott's talking about. And I think that you saw an arc like that where players did it in that generation when they were trying to build it up. Guys like Sinjin, who came from the nothing to the peak, understood the importance of the things that were done when the sport was nothing. But now the guys who only saw the peak don't understand how the importance of that touch with the fans. I think the other thing he touched on was the goals and the path. Like with juniors volleyball, there is a goal: get a scholarship or a path, go to school, make friends, be part of a team, a championship run, the education that goes on with that with a lot of kids, because not everybody plays just to win a championship, even though there's tremendous competition for that, and for the scholarships, the 10,000 scholarships that are out there that drive junior volleyball on the women's side of the game. Will college sand volleyball, the push for that, will that solve some of that grassroots issue? Yet to be determined. We will see. That's why the big push. That's why the AVP was so hard behind it, because they didn't want to run AVP Next. They didn't want to run juniors tournaments. They didn't want to be a grassroots organization. They wanted to be a professional organization that functioned like tennis. They didn't want to have to deal with all the other stuff that USA Volleyball has to deal with. So they want to get that off onto the college system and then have beach clubs develop that would then feed into that college system. Because without beach scholarship money in the collegiate level, you're never going to have a thriving club system for beach volleyball. First of all, because it's winter, okay? You're up against winter. So there aren't a lot of sand-only facilities around. Now, you would see some crop up, but there's a tipping point in there like with every other business. The money at the collegiate level would change that. That would be a game changer. And that's why you've seen the push there. So great call, Scott. Appreciate the call and the history lesson on some of the stuff. Reed.
You know, we've debated those things. We've debated these issues. Basically, is it a performance sport or a lifestyle sport? Quite a bit on the show. I tend to agree with Scott that I tend towards the performance side only because I think the lifestyle is already built in. And that's even on the indoor side, too. It might not be all rainbows and ponies, but it's rainbows and boardies. If you take 10 players over the nation, whether they be from Pennsylvania, Chicago, Texas, Florida, California, at a juniors event, and they're under 18, they're more than likely going to be wearing boardies and rainbows in between their matches at JOs. They're going to have a similar look. And that's the pitch I would always make to the Hurleys and the Nikes and saying, hey, there doesn't need to be a marketing push towards a lifestyle. They're already in a particular lifestyle. But where I would disagree with them is that I think TV is completely necessary. Maybe not buying the TV, but as I've always said on this show, using the internet to live stream. Otherwise, how do you show the intricacies of the performance side? You have to go watch a match and be there in person. That's too hard. I think we want these events, like the AVP event, if you're living in New York, that you can experience the entire beach volleyball tour, that you don't just have to wait till it happens to come to New Jersey or make a trip out to Chicago or Florida or some other place. But again, if any of these questions could be easily answered, it would be done already. Obviously, there's something that we're up against that's a lot bigger than anything anybody has ever been able to figure out yet. It's a hard thing to tackle, and I just hope that, here we have this opportunity for everyone to work together. And of course, on the surface, it sounds like, even on this show, we're having these people say, oh, we're cooperating with this person, we're cooperating with that person. But to be honest with you, behind the scenes, it doesn't sound like many people are cooperating.
You can't have coopetition in this business. it's not going to work, to bring back a Hueism. You can't have coopetition. It's business. One business entity is going to need to take up the entire United States space for beach volleyball if they're going to make any money, if they're going to be a business.
Is it that we're caught in this kind of no man's land of it's kind of an affluent sport, so we're in these cities like Manhattan Beach, like Chicago? I mean, these permits cannot be cheap.
And so those events lose money, not Chicago, but the California events.
And so here you have these flagship events that it's incredible. The overhead, I guess, has got to be extremely expensive.
$1 million to put it on before prize money.
And then we're trying to get, you know, being told that you can't sell tickets or you know, the volleyball community in general doesn't like to pay for things, it seems like.
In Southern California, very true. The gate, as you heard Scott mention, promoted the Michigan events, there's a gate. Cincinnati, there's a gate. Chicago, there's a gate. That's the cultural norm there. Southern California, there is no cultural norm. Now, let me ask you this, Reed, though, because you talked about the intricacies of the game, the professional side of the game. Are there enough intricacies in beach volleyball to really make it a professional, standalone game that happens to have a lifestyle with it? Because I don't know that there's enough depth there.
Oh, I think there is. I definitely think there is.
I think it needs to be theater. Part of the thing that made it attractive back in the day was the theater. Hav Dodd, St. John, you know, Smith Stoklos, Karai Steffes, the attitudes, the people. It was like WWF to some extent. Not that extreme. But there were personalities that carried the sport a bit, that enhanced the attention. And I think that the sport needs that. We've touched on that a lot when we talk about Phil and Todd and how boring they are. They are professional as you can get. They represent their brands, themselves, the sport, in every way you would want.
I don't know that we're looking at it the same way. And I think that I don't know. There's been groups and there's currently groups that believe that it's all about making stars out of people. When I think of professional versus lifestyle, the professional aspect that I'm thinking of is Phil's ability to block balls. His pure ability to do that skill at such a high level in such a way that nobody else in the world can do that. Nobody can do what he does time and time again, and I think that's phenomenal. When I watch the NBA, I'm watching guys do things that other people in the world cannot do, and that to me is fascinating, and that's what draws me to the NBA is their ability to, Dwayne Wade's ability to jump so stinking high and operate in a world that's, 6-8 inches taller than him.
Let me ask, I don't disagree with anything you just said, but let me ask you this, though. How many ways are there to dunk a basketball?
Well, there's certainly difference.
A bazillion, right? Attractive ways to dunk a basketball. How many ways are there to dunk or block a volleyball? If I can get this right.
I see what you're saying, but I still think there's enough there. I still think there's enough there. And
okay.
I think it comes back to the discussion we've had on the show before regarding how we tell the story, how we're showing the game. And when you do that that sideline, 50-yard line thing, you lose so much. You lose the timing aspect. And the when you're looking at it from half court, you're not seeing where the ball's going, really. You're not seeing the angles.
You're talking about the TV coverage being TV coverage. The side coverage where the court fills the screen.
And to me, that's how you tell a professional story is by TV, by slow-mo. You know, unless you're playing the game at the highest level, it's really hard to see. Or unless you play the game a lot and really are familiar with the game, it's hard to appreciate the difficulties that are happening.
That's part of it. There aren't enough people who have done that.
I ran into like friends of mine who didn't follow volleyball until I got involved. They would say, oh, it looks easy. They're like, oh, you just go on the beach and hit a volleyball round. And I would tell them to go out there and try to jump and hit a ball in the sand and then give me a call.
Right.
And until people realize how difficult it is, I don't think people who don't know volleyball, they can't appreciate what Phil is doing.
But I think there's an appreciation for that if they get to that point.
Yeah,
it's amazing. But then to watch it done. If you're watching a football game, the variation in a football game is huge. The potential for variation, plays, players, individual moves, ways the ball goes up and down the field, ways the ball gets turned over, all those different things. There's so much possibility. True of basketball as well. Even hockey, which you talk about the technology piece, and that has helped hockey tremendously. HD television made such a difference. You can see the puck. It's not like a pixelated mess.
I won't watch sports unless it's in HD now.
Yeah, it's so much
better.
Can't do it. So I think that there's a lot more depth to those games. Indoor, for me, as an indoor player, as an indoor person, as a broadcaster, bogs down at times. Reed mentioned Sunderland getting upset at the finals because at one point 16 service errors. you're talking about a quarter of the points scored in that. In that set, if it's close, a quarter of the points are just errors. It's way too many. But indoor has 12 people doing a variety of different attack moves, service moves, receiving moves. There's strategy involved with that much variation. With the beach, you're down to four people. There's not nearly enough variation going on. And people say to me, well, tennis, you know, tennis is a game. Yeah, but tennis is just one of these things. It's like baseball. If you introduce baseball today, it would never succeed. It's too slow, too boring. No one would ever go. It just has been around forever, and it's part of the fabric of the United States. But that's why you've seen it lose to football, I think. And tennis is one of those things that's been around forever, and rich people love it. So it moves product around it because rich people love it, and they consume Bulova watches. I can't probably say it right. I don't have enough money yet. And other things that are associated with that lifestyle, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, whatever it may be. Volleyball is not in that position. I think it lacks some depth. Now, the solution to that, as far as rules-wise, when Reed was talking about FIVB's fault for all the service errors, sure, yeah, the rules are the way that they are. And the problem with slowing it down for substitutions and stuff on the indoor side is an FIVB problem. I agree. I don't know how you fix it. I'd be interested to know. And you can email us with your solution, thenetlive@gmail.com. You can post it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thenetlive. Is there enough depth in beach volleyball? If there is, tell me about it. If there isn't, how do you fix it through rules changes or lifestyle changes? Or volleyball in general. Talk about indoor too. Get on your soapbox and post on our page or send us an email. Hey, it's been another fun show. It's been a good show. 2 hours? A little more?
Fluid.
Fluid at the end, man. And hey, people out there, don't get too upset about the beginning. Jesus, that's the whole point. Relax.
If Kevin offended you, he apologizes.
No, I don't. But just relax. That's the whole point. Relax. Have fun. We get into some issues here, but at the end of the day, we're going to stop and we're going to go eat some sandwiches. And it's going to be fun. Big thanks to AVCA, American Volleyball Coaches Association, for continuing their involvement with our program, and Volleyball Magazine for their support. We're going to be meeting with those guys tomorrow. You'll be there, pretty.
I'm here.
Yeah. You're coming up to the South Bay. For Reed and Jeremy, I'm Kevin. It's been fun. Talk to us during the week. We'll see you next week. Hey, if you're still listening, hang on. Hang on. Don't do the computer yet. We got to talk about Favre for just a second. Favre. How did we miss that? I had it circled on my sheet.
Roy
Favre Ball is back.
He's come out of retirement.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm with him. You can buy me, too. You can buy me right now. You can buy me for that money, broken knee and all. I will come right back to the sport.
Yeah, he's definitely back in the market, has signed with a team called UFA, which is a rival of Kazan, with Clay Stanley, linking arms again. And very, very interessante.
So we're going to talk about next week his return to the national team. That'll be the topic.
Contractually, rumors are enormous. Much, much more than any volleyball player has ever seen.
1-8-2 is the number I've heard thrown around.
He's going to be a new sponsor of the show?
Damn right. Damn right. We'll have his next retirement announcement when it comes. We'll have an exclusive, the decision.
Good for him.
All right, so good for Lloyd Ball.
I want my wetsuit back.
Had to get that update in there. Now, we'll see you next Monday. The Net Live. Thanks, everybody.